I taught myself to touch type when I was 14. It was step one in becoming a great novelist. I sat inside all summer with a chart on the wall and a cast iron typewriter hidden under a bib. Now, the novels never came, but it's just about the most useful thing I have ever learnt in my life. But the layout made no sense at all. Why, from left to right, in the top line, the letters Q-W-E-R-T-Y, QWERTY. It's the keyboard we all know by heart. But in the English alphabet, it makes no sense at all. It goes way back to the first typewriters of the 19th century, said to be deliberately awkward in a way to stop early machines jamming. Faster and more efficient layouts are available. Why can't we make the change? Are we stuck with QWERTY forever? Gianfranco Di Giovanni is an ABC tech journalist, and he joins me now from the West. Gianni, welcome to the show.
Good evening. Thanks for having me.
Now, look, is it true that the keyboard was designed to be deliberately awkward?
Well, that has always been the rumor, and it was the one that I was told as I was learning to use the keyboard myself, that it was actually designed to slow people down. As they were tapping away at their typewriters, that the mechanical little pins that would hit against the paper and the ribbon to put mark on there, you'd slow them down so you stopped yourself from jamming. But apparently that isn't as true as we would have thought. It's a nice story, but the actual layout of the keyboard has kind of had a bit of an evolution over time. And as you said, in the 19th century, as typewriters became more common, people were kind of a bit more, becoming more familiar with them. But David, did you know that the first keyboards that people would type on actually really resembled the keys of a piano?
So they were long.
They were relatively long. They were kind of stacked, a bit like a small little keyboard you might see at a DJ set or something like that. But they actually really had those black and white keys you'd be very familiar with on a piano keyboard, effectively. And that's what they look like. And that was the first sort of style of them. And using that was in A to Z, that sort of style format of actually typing out that way. But that particular format was not super efficient for the people who would come to be the most frequent users of that particular type of keyboard.
A to Z would be as ridiculous as QWERTY, wouldn't it?
Because yes.
Don't you want the letters you most use sort of under your fingers?
Effectively, yeah. So when you were learning to type, did you learn about the home row, which is that kind of middle set of keys that you have, the A, S, D, F, G, A, G, H, J? I'm looking at mine in front of me now as I'm going
to.
And so those particular rows, you would sit your fingers across and you'd often have your thumb sitting on the space bar as well as you would kind of go to type, and you'd be reaching to the bottom and the top rows as you go and kind of typing in that sort of orientation. And so the people that originally were using a lot of typing and were the people who were in communication, much like we are, they were sending messages. So it was the original telegraph offices which became the sort of, test bed for those original typewriters. And they were the ones that found that the sort of original layout, which resembled a keyboard on a piano, was the one that was causing issues and didn't quite make sense as you were trying to get a message down.
So the keyboard was rearranged so that it came in decks. And then you talk about people sending messages. So Morse code has a part of this story.
It does, yeah. So Christopher Latham Sholes was the inventor of one of the many different competing types of typewriters and typewriter keyboards. And, they've said that, he's one of, the 50-odd people who's tried to come at this one. But he actually came across something that was a pretty clever way to get it into the familiarity of many people who needed to type. So the first typewriter that he made, he was a printer by trade in 1868. Was sold off to Porter's Telegraph College, the people who would be sending messages around the United States in Chicago. And that was where that particular style sort of started to bed in as people kind of became familiar with it, and the speed of that particular layout tended to be the one that people started to learn. And so it was originally licensed off to Remington, which people might know as, like, if you've watched cowboy movies, the Remington rifles and things like that. So that same company was also making typewriters and machinery at that time, and they used that layout as their one, and they also very cleverly got people to learn how to use this. You buy this particular piece of equipment and hey, we'll teach you how to use it at the same time. And so people who needed to learn how to type were using this particular model, and then they were using this particular layout, and as you got better at it, that was the one that kind of stuck.
So QWERTY spread.
Yeah, that's right. And so what probably also helped was, a bit of old-fashioned monopolies here. The Remington company basically took over about four of their rivals. And so that particular QWERTY format became the sort of standard format that many other people started to use. And so with so much of technology and so many of the things that we use, you just think of the inertia that's there and the sort of time loss or the risk of potentially learning how to do a different piece of technology. And it just becomes easier for everyone to kind of adopt one standard. And in many circumstances, that's really good when we've got a really quite efficient and familiar layout of a keyboard. But in modern technology, we think, oh, you know, everyone wants to use this particular app to do something, and it becomes hard to switch over if all of your friends are using the same one.
This is ABC Radio National Late Night Live. I'm David Marr, and I'm talking to Gianfranco Di Giovanni, who goes by Gianni, about the development of the keyboard. Now, Gianni, obviously from early on, people were looking to better systems. Were any of these better systems ever on the brink of being introduced?
Well, yes, there's a very famous layout called the Dvorak layout, which was developed by August Dvorak, and that came in around the 1930s. But if you think about the timeframes we were talking about before, sort of the late 19th century, the 1870s, 1868, sort of that time frame, there's been basically about, you know, 60-odd years or so by the time that this competing format came about. And so there was some testing that was done, including by the US military, where they said that this Dvorak format, which has, you know, slightly different orientation of keys. In fact, you know, if you look at the numbers on your keyboard, those numbers were not in number order. They were like seven and a bunch of different things.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's all over the place, right? And so you could kind of say, okay, the letters might want to go where they're most frequently, but kind of you would think that numbers should be in the order that they're in. So anyway, that was one of the ones that was supposed to be more efficient at typing. But the problem was there's this kind of technical debt that comes with having a piece of technology that you use, and the cost of having to learn something new is often too much for people to bear. So while the Dvorak sort of format style of keyboard layout is popular for some, it's a bit of a niche and you can buy keyboards or you can go and change your keyboards if you've got a fancy one into that particular layout, it isn't one that ever managed to take off because there was just too much inertia behind QWERTY and too many people knew how to use it.
But couldn't they say, you know, from this time forward, everybody will be trained on Dvorak?
Has that ever worked? Has that ever worked in the past?
No.
I mean, America still sticks with, you know, pounds and inches and all of those sorts of things. So there's too much of inertia behind that particular, even though the rest of the world has moved on. So, you know, I think it's a nice idea. And actually, did you know you can actually go and change the layout on your phone keyboard to a Dvorak layout if you choose? Like, actually, the modern phones actually do support that. So if you were really thinking about, oh, let's give that a go, it's something you could pull out of your pocket and have a play with. Just have a look at the way that it goes, you know, and try type it out and see if it actually works more efficiently for you.
Who are the prisoners of QWERTY? Is it only English speakers?
There is quite a few countries that are actually using that QWERTY format. There's a variety of different standards that they have, an ISO format, an ANSI format, and a JIS format. And the JIS in particular is the Japanese one, which I wanted to talk to you about, because it actually uses that QWERTY format, but it actually has a way in which you can type out like a transliterated Japanese word. So Romaji is the way that you type out, you know, how you would see Japanese names spelt in English. You type the words out as you would, and then it gets turned into hiragana and katakana as well, the two like Japanese writing scripts. So it actually uses a familiar enough keyboard that we would be looking at in front of us and most of us in Australia. And
a QWERTY board.
A QWERTY board, basically, yeah.
So
and it uses
so,
that in a different language.
I've always wondered how that works, because obviously you can't have a keyboard with, you know, several thousand symbols on it.
Yeah.
So they type in a transliteration.
In Japanese in particular, yes.
A transliteration and it types the symbols.
Yeah, so for example, if you typed in Tokyo, as we would spell Tokyo out on the keyboard, then it would give you the character for Tokyo as it translated through. So that's, you know, very similar to some of the other languages that use non-English characters, and Arabic, for example, has a version of that too. You know, there are different versions though, which for languages which still use the Latin script as we write it, there are a number of different types. So, for example, Turkish uses a QWERTY, which has a slightly different format. The French, the people in French-speaking places in Africa, people in Belgium, for example, use a QWERTY. as a format, which is very similar but has a few of their more popular letters put into slightly different locations. And the Germans and the German-speaking parts of the world use QWERTZ instead of QWERTY as well. So there's a variety of different slightly adjusted models on the way that we would type, but mostly pretty familiar to what we would have seen in the 1870s, 1880s, 1890s.
So somebody from then could jump forward in time and sit down happily and type. Except how long is it since you've tried to type on an old keyboard, on a keyboard that types onto paper? It's terribly difficult.
Yeah, it's not an – well, you know, I think there's a romance to it in a way that is quite enjoyable, but it is one of those formats that I think is quite interesting. But can I tell you as well that, like, in the 1960s, there was IBM. Obviously, many people would know IBM as a computing company. They were a business machines company, and they built electric typewriters. Then there was a famous one called the IBM Selectric. And that format of keyboard that they used actually ended up being the sort of 1980s style Model M keyboard, which is iconic, which most people would like be familiar with if they're using a computer. And that sort of, you know, that grey sort of beigey sort of look that you would see is actually a type of keyboard that is really sought after for people today, because it used a mechanical function which is much similar to that typewriter function. It actually has little switches and buttons and stuff. And so mechanical keyboards these days, particularly in the sort of computer enthusiast space, are really, really popular. And I've got one right here, and I'm going to just play a little bit of this sound. Can you just hear that clacking away? That sort of
It's the sound of a newsroom.
It is, isn't it? It's beautiful.
The Sydney Morning Herald newsroom with a couple of hundred people.
Exactly.
I know. I'm being over romantic here.
But they're kind of beautiful, and I think people who do in that specialist, like enthusiast of those beautiful keyboards, people do spend a lot of time, and they go and change the mechanism, and they go and change the build of the whole thing. They change the cables, so there is a romance that's kind of associated with the keyboard for people who really love that style, and it sticks around till today.
Johnny, are we always going to have to learn to type?
I don't know, actually. It's really interesting. I think...
Will something be implanted in our brain so that we can just think and the text appears?
Oh, probably. Probably eventually. But I don't know. I think it's one of those things that, you know, I don't know about you, David, but when I'm writing stories, there's something about just putting some music on, putting your hands on the keyboard. And once you get to a rhythm with typing, you really can just feel when you have put a key out of the wrong place or you've typed something incorrectly, and the rhythm of your fingers across the keyboard is something that I really, really love and really enjoy. So, you know, maybe I'm a romantic in this respect.
Johnny,
as well.
How can you have music playing? You have to have silence. No, you absolutely have to have silence.
I can't have any words, but I can definitely have music in the background. So I play a lot of ABC Classic, actually, and a variety of other things, but any words in there interrupts my brain, so...
It's just extraordinary. No, it has to be silence. Johnny, thank you so much for explaining this. Gianfranco Di Giovanni, ABC tech journalist. He's also the content director at ABC Local Perth Radio, from where he's been speaking to the show.